Hello, world. On this week's episode of the Diversity Hires, we are going to break our format a little bit, and we're going to do a special episode dedicated entirely to don't do that shit. What don't we want you to do? Well, we don't want you to write passive characters. Passive characters, don't do that shit. Anything to add, Shu?
This is really for the craft nerds, for the people who like to dig down deep into the building blocks of screenplays and really geek out on all these like intricate elements. That's what we're going to try to get into. So, you know, shout out to the nerds because this one is for you.
Hit the music. Yo. Welcome to The Diversity Hires, a podcast where Sherman Shu shoot the shit about screenwriting.
We are two professional screenwriters, film and television writers, living and working here in Los Angeles. And we come here every week to give you the lowdown on the business, the craft, and the culture of screenwriting while black. I'm Shakri Hassan Tillman, a.k.a. Shu.
Lemonade was a popular drink, and it still is. You know who it is. It's your boy, Sherman Payne, the greatest screenwriter of all time.
The G-Swoke. It's wonderful. I think I am the Rodney Dangerfield of screenwriting. That's why I'm going to go with that.
Because why? You get no respect?
I get no respect, bro.
You get a lot of respect. Sure, you're respected everywhere you go.
I get no respect. You know, I had one deadline article in my entire life, which is fine. There, we know plenty of people who are really doing well who have never been mentioned in any of the trades because sometimes it just doesn't happen like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I got mentioned in the trades one time recently, first time.
Yeah.
And the announcement comes out for this project that I'm doing at HBO Max. And the sentence says, everything about the producers and the show is inspired by the creation of Essence Magazine. And the co-founder of Essence Magazine is involved and is executive producer. It is produced by this person and that person. And then this gets to the writers and it goes, they are still on the search for for writers for this project.
I do remember this, but they quickly corrected.
They corrected it the same day. But meanwhile, you know, the project originated with one of those producers, but it was brought to me. I've been involved in that project for 2 years. Anyway, helped bring other people along, but whatever. I think that's like par for the course, man. This is what I'm feeling at this moment in my career. You know, I get no respect out here.
You know what, man? I actually feel like you're the Tim Duncan of screenwriting because you're like the big fundamental. You're like, you got all the skills. You got all the skills. You're not loud. You're not going to go out there and just have crazy loud outfits walking down the tunnel. You're not going to have crazy post-game interviews. You're just going to like drop 28 and 12 and just do it daily, consistently.
And be forgotten about. Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan. Are you crazy?
If you ask the app, Tim Duncan, by the way, I think won at least 3, if not more, championships. I don't know. I got to see how many. He might have won 5. He didn't
win 5.
I think
it's like in the 5 range. Yeah. I think it's in the 5 range.
If it's 5, then that means he's basically Kobe Bryant. But does anybody think that? No.
The people who you want to know, man. The people who you want to know. Do you want props from just Joe Blow who doesn't know anything? Or do you want props from the people who really know what they're talking about? The people who live and breathe this industry. Because the people who live and breathe this industry, when I mention Shakri's name, the admiration in their eyes is crazy. It's crazy.
Total bullshit.
It's not.
I appreciate it.
No.
That's total BS. Look, I don't think any, maybe you can attest to this, I don't know, but I think any good endeavor, you know, I'm a former athlete, the former 147th best high school basketball player in Delaware.
Yo.
And I try to approach things in some ways like an athletic competition, even though they're not. I mean, writing is not an athletic competition at all. It's not even a competition, really. But it is a competition sort of, you know, with yourself. You try to challenge yourself to do better and better and better. Mm-hmm. And I think in any approach like that, whether you're an entrepreneur or an athlete or an artist, you look out on the industry or the sport or whatever that you're a part of, and you try to make up narratives to motivate yourself and to sort of push. And yes, whether that narrative is like loosely based in truth or completely made up, it doesn't really matter. There's something natural about going to that place. So for me, it is certainly like, and it is, for me, it is based on some modicum of truth that I feel like I don't get any respect out here. I've never had anything made. I've had, you know, pilots developed and written. I send people stuff that I think is like, this is a fantastic script.
Yeah.
Can't get it made, can't get it put on. I know it's great. So I'm gonna continue to believe I'm just Rodney Dangerfield out here, and I'm gonna have to figure out something else in 2021.
Well, listen, I hear you, man, because I do treat it like a competition. You know, I'm obviously a big nerd. Everybody knows that by now. Anybody who actually knows me knows I'm a big lame nerd, but I love rap music. And I just, when, you know, even when you're in the same crew, right? Like even when, like me, like shoot, me and you are, we're in the same crew, man. We're like both, you know, in the same, we're going to appear on each other's albums, all that. But
yeah,
when we appear on the same thing, bro, I'm trying to embarrass you. I just want to lap you. I just want to dunk on Shakri. I want people to be like, yo, Shakri's dope, but Sherman killed it. And I feel like that's the spirit of competition, and that's the spirit of the sort of the battle that I've incorporated in my in the way that I look at the industry. So I'm out here trying to battle everybody. You know what I'm saying?
I feel you. I do.
Yeah. I think you need that to stay motivated. I do think you need to create narratives to stay motivated, because if you really just are comfortable, you know, you're just comfortable, you feel like you're getting all the props you deserve, you feel like you've reached the peak of your skills, and you know, what are you even doing? What's motivating you to keep going?
I agree. I used to say, like, and this was early in my sort of like, you know, breaking in. I mean, again, it's not like we've been in the business for 25 years, but it's been a, you know, good, you know, almost decade of you know, being in this professionally, at least. So at the beginning of it, I used to give people advice. If I was asked, I would give people advice of like, people would say, how do I get in or make it? And I used to say, like, I used to have this line, like, it really has to be like eating. And what I meant by that is like, there's something about trying to do this thing that's really hard, writing, and trying to do it really well, that is very difficult. And if it is not akin to getting food for you, if it is not akin to like feeding your body, the basic survival element that is, if it doesn't feel like that in your mind, if you're not as motivated to become a great writer as you are to nourish your body, then I don't think it's possible. I think it's possible to be okay. I just don't think it's possible to be great. And to me, it feels like, why be in this if you're not attempting to be great? Why not? Why be in this if you're not attempting to be the best?
Dude, yes, 100%. Yeah. I mean, that's why do you think I come on here and call myself the greatest screenwriter of all time? If I don't think I'm the greatest, what am I doing here? I should just get out of the way. I should let the people who actually think they're great work and take the jobs and put out material. Like, what are you doing if you think I'm just okay? All right, get out of my way, because you're cluttering the pipeline. Your scripts are in the pile with my heat, and you're stopping people from getting to it. Get out of my way, bro.
Get out of here.
You know, I mean, I don't know how much of this will make it in the final cut, but to that point that you were just making, I remember when I started film school, and I made it to my junior year of my film program, which was a big hurdle because only a few select students were invited into the program junior year of undergrad. And the teacher looked at us and said, "You got to be crazy to do this. If you're not crazy, you know, you should go get a regular job. It's going to be much easier for you. It's going to be a much straighter path for you. It's going to have less conflict. It's going to have less heartbreak. Just go get a regular job. But if you're crazy and you can't think of doing anything else and you need to do this, then, you know, continue. Work at it."
Yeah, for real, man.
I want to get to the main subject because I have a lot to say about the subject today. We are going to be talking about, well, the whole episode is don't do that shit. The whole episode is don't do that shit, write passive characters. We couldn't really contain a subject this big in the little 5 or 10 minute segment that we do at the end. We really had to break it out to discuss it because it's such a huge topic and it's so foundational to good writing. We really had to dedicate a whole episode. So before we even get into sort of the techniques and the structure and the way that you craft active characters as opposed to passive characters, I wanted to pose a question to you.
Okay.
Why is it that so many, you know, it's kind of like we were just talking about halfway crooks. We're kind of talking about writers who really don't take it seriously. Why do so many people in our industry not really understand this basic principle?
Oh, the passive character principle?
Yeah, just write, you know, so many people write passive characters. Why? How? How does it happen?
I think there are a couple main reasons, but I think they could all be placed under the umbrella of people that tend to get into film and television writing, and I think this is probably more true in television, tend to get there by way of they get there and they break in even with little training. And that's not to say that they are bad writers necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I think what happens a lot of the times, again, it goes back to what I was saying, yes, that I think becoming a television writer or a screenwriter seems to be a flashy thing, and people want to get into it the same way they want to get into acting or something, or get into, like, you know, being famous or whatever the fuck. And so I don't think there's a high level of respect for craft. There is a high level of respect for sort of, or not even respect, there's a high level of sort of admiration for doing the job itself or having the job, but not a high level of respect and admiration for what it takes to build great stories. Also, and this is number two related to that, most television sucks. Yes. Let's be real. It sucks. And so, and then that's not saying it's written by, you know, terrible people who don't know what they're doing. That's not the case necessarily. There are a lot of different reasons why it might suck. But even in the golden age, the so-called golden age of television, what does that mean? That out of 400 shows, 12 are great?
12
I mean,
were
that's
great,
not a
and
high.
Then there was,
that's yeah.
On top of a pile of trash. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's not a very high percentage. So what happens is that, and I'll shut up. But I think it all falls under, there's not a high level of training, I think. And if there was, if there is, it certainly gets beaten the hell out of you by the time you've been in television rooms long enough, being sort of taught or shown things that are not good over and over and over until, because of, again, out of the 400 shows, only 12 of them are good.
Yeah.
So you're going to have a lot of shit. And so you just learn bad habits.
I think that it's a problem of learning bad habits. I think it's also a problem of just imitation. You know, there are a lot of smart people, a lot of really capable, articulate, smart people who are pretty bad writers. And so because they're smart and they're articulate and they, you know, they read a lot or whatever, they're sort of able to like in a very shallow way, imitate good writing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they can imitate what makes good writing feel like good writing on the page. You know, snappy dialogue. Oh man, good writing. Oh, twists and turns, big plot changes. Oh, good writing. Flowery language in the prose. Oh man, good writing. But underneath, there's nothing there. You know what I mean? It's like somebody learning to decorate a cake on like mm-hmm. a styrofoam, you know, like a styrofoam mold of a cake. Yes, you have decorated the cake. Look at how pretty that icing is. If I cut into it, it's still styrofoam. It's hollow. You haven't learned to actually bake the cake. You haven't learned to do the foundational stuff. And I think a lot of people take that foundational shit for granted, right? Because we are all film and television experts. We've all been watching film and TV since we were 0 years old. We have decades and decades of watching, feeling like we understand, sort of learning the visual language and storytelling language. But very few people peel back that layer, take off that icing, off that mold, and learn how to actually bake the cake and not just do the pretty stuff that comes on top of it. So I think that's a problem, is that there's a sort of a learning problem. There's an imitation problem. And, you know, it also to throw another analogy into this sort of jumbled analogy. It's sort of like playing video games, man. I don't know if you ever played fighting games growing up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way that you can
Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter and all that.
And so there's button mashers, right? There's people who just button mash. They just press buttons. And if you button mash long enough, you can sort of get a good rhythm. You could sort of get a good rhythm with your button mashing. You could sort of understand, if I press these buttons real fast at this point, I'll do this. If I press the buttons real fast at this point, I'll do that. But then you encounter somebody who studied the manual. Then you encounter somebody who actually knows the combos, and they wipe you off the screen. And the reason why they wipe you off the screen is they learned the fundamentals, man. They actually learned how it worked. They didn't just button mash and time stuff and, oh, it's cool. I do this and something happened. You know, they actually learned how it works. They can connect it in a way that will destroy you. And I think that's what the foundation, I think what we're going to talk about today is actually that level of foundation.
I just want to say that I agree wholeheartedly, and the fundamental piece is so key. And I guess that's what I was trying to say with training. It's not so much that people haven't gone to, you know, film schools or taking classes or things like that to learn the trade. It's just that there is something about, there's learning it, and then there's also being immersed in the fundamentals and going back to the fundamentals. And I'll make one point on this, because I think your analogies are absolutely right. By the way, I just want to throw in, I'll say for myself, you know, I'm not a perfect writer. No one is. I often
speak for yourself, homie. Speak for yourself.
There are times where I make the same mistakes, where I forget the fundamentals. But I think being able to go back to them and to know them is really the key. I used to say, like, you know, Michael Jordan, greatest basketball player of all time. Maybe LeBron James is catching him. You know, when Michael finishes a season, right, and he goes to the summer to start working on his game again, he is doing the same drills in the beginning that a 9-year-old is doing when they learn how to play basketball.
Yes.
Because he's just going back. Now, he may get further than that quicker than the 9-year-old, of course, but when he goes back to start his summer routine, he goes right back to the same fundamental drills, the same fundamental elements of playing basketball, of shooting, of dribbling, of playing defense that a 9-year-old does. And in the same way, writers can go back, or should go back, to the fundamentals. They are the same that you would learn when you're 17 learning how to write, when you're 25 in graduate school, when you're 30, you know, getting out, whatever, writing your first pilot. The same fundamentals apply. It's just a question of how much you go back to that over and over again. And I think the people that you're describing are people who believe they don't have to go back to that summer workout and learn it over and over again to become better.
Do you have anything else to add before we actually start talking about
about? I was gonna say we've talked around it. We should talk it to people are probably listening, go, okay, but what is the it?
Okay, so the it is passive characters suck. Passive characters will sink your script. It's like the number one thing I read when I read a script or when I watch a show and I see a passive character. It ruins it for me. I'm literally not into the story. So what is a passive character, Shu?
A passive central character, as it's called sometimes, is a character for whom things are happening to. They are not generating any of the action in the script. And generally it's because we have not clearly defined what their wants or needs are in the script, and the activity that they are going to go through or do in order to accomplish those wants and needs. Is that fair?
100%. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. We need to see characters as human beings, you know, and these are storytelling techniques that go back to really cave paintings on walls. And it definitely goes back to the ancient Greeks who sort of formalized drama. We need, as human beings, when we engage in a story, we need a character who is striving to get something. We need a character who is trying very hard to accomplish what they want. We need a character who holds on to their objective through all the trials and tribulations of life, whether it's a quiet indie drama or a horror movie about survival or some space epic. We need that. Why do we need that? Well, I think because as human beings, we want to see other people trying to accomplish something. That's a feeling that we can really hold on to. We can really engage in. We can really see ourselves in their own shoes. When we see people trying to accomplish things, we can relate to it because we all want to accomplish things in our lives. The second thing is when a character is passive and things are just happening to that character, we start to lose direction for the story. We don't quite understand why things are happening. They feel haphazard. They feel like they're happening sort of outside the context of the story. They feel like the writer is just throwing things into the mix because the character is not the one who's moving the narrative forward.
That's right.
That's right. Okay, so that's the end of the podcast. No, just kidding. But I think... what we're talking about here really boils down to the two things that we just talked about, Shu. I mean, I think that's what makes story click, and that's why passive characters are so whack, right?
Yeah, and like one of the things that, I say this often, I'm not making this up. This is not coming from me. This is coming from, you know, anybody, from Aaron Sorkin or other teachers or screenwriters that say something similar to this, that, you know, all stories ultimately boil down to a character who has an intention, who meets an obstacle. That obstacle, or what they do with that obstacle, reveals character, reveals who they are. And those are the building blocks of a story. Again, intention meets obstacle, what that character does in relationship to that obstacle, what they do as a result of that obstacle, reveals their inner character. And then it's kind of rinse and repeat. Now, there are some other structural things beyond that, but I think holding on to that, to your point, holding on to character intention meeting obstacle is, if you don't have that, you're done from the beginning. If you do have that, you got something that you can hang your story off of. Now, I'll say, if it's okay to segue, let's talk about what intention is and what it isn't and what wants are and what they aren't. And one of the things that I think I see a lot that, as an imperfect screenwriter, fall into this trap sometimes myself, is that what I call negative wants. So a character, they don't particularly want anything. They want the lack of something or the not something to happen. I don't want this person to rob me. I don't want the I don't know, social services to take my kids. Why did I go to that place? But anyway, I don't want a negative want, right? Which is not something, it's hard to build an active want off of not wanting something to happen, because all a character can do to not want something to happen is just, you know, sit in their room. What do you do?
Well, you have to, if you're going to fix that, you have to flip it, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't want the asteroid to hit Earth and wipe out humanity. Yeah, of course, nobody does. It doesn't really tell me anything about the character, and I don't actually know how the character gets involved. You can sort of say that's a want, but it really is a passive character. You know what I mean? It really is a passive character who is sort of waiting.
Because reaction is passivity.
Well, I want to talk about that too, because I hate that word, reaction. But if you tell me I want to stop the asteroid from hitting Earth, well, then now we can write a movie about that. What are you going to do? Are you going to get a mining team to land on the asteroid and blow it up from the inside? That's active.
Right.
You know, that's really active. So I think that's a really great point. I say the other thing is about that is that it's got to be visual. It's got to be visual. It's got to be tangible. We have to be able to see it on screen. Filmmaking, after all, and television making, after all, is still a visual medium. And it's really hard to imagine what something not happening looks like, right?
Yes,
it's really difficult.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't happen. Okay, so then it doesn't happen. We don't see it on screen. But right. Something happening... really, 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 you can start to talk about, like, well, if my goal is to blow up the asteroid that's going to hit Earth, I know what an exploding asteroid looks like.
Right.
You can put it on screen as something super visual. So the other thing that I think, a close cousin to what you just described, are these deep-seated emotional wants that haven't been made tangible that we can see. And so it's like, I want love. What does love look like? I can't see that on screen. I don't know what it necessarily looks like to get love. But if you tell me I want to get married by Valentine's Day next year, okay, well, then that is something I can see. I know what a wedding looks like. I know what it looks like to be in a healthy relationship. I know what it looks like to get proposed to. I can start to see that. Or you tell me I want love and I want to make that visual and tangible by attaching it to the big school dance at the end of the year. I know what it looks like for a high school sweetheart to get asked to the big school dance, the prom, at the end of the year. Making those things visual, something that we can see, really thinking about what it looks like when the story comes to a conclusion is a big, big part of it. And like you said, negative wants and deeply seated emotional wants, they don't really accomplish that.
I agree, but I do want to make a point about those emotional wants, because for me, I like to identify what I call, you know, intrinsic needs and extrinsic wants, or sometimes it's just called wants and needs. And to me, wants are this is just the way I arrange it in my head. Wants are external and needs are internal. So, you know, I recently wrote a script that went nowhere, Rodney Dangerfield, that was who centered on a main character who's living out of her car and broke and trying to ultimately her external want. Well, let me go to her internal want first. This is who this character, we find this character in the beginning, as I just described, down on her luck, essentially. I just, early in the process, I identified when I was making this story that this person who had been abandoned by her mother earlier in her life, really ultimately her internal need was to be held by her mother. That was her internal need. That was everything that drove her as a person, was really to just want that feeling again, to be held by her mother who had left her. Mm-hmm. Now the story, without getting too deep into it, the story was about her, this long lost mother sort of coming back into this woman's life. But that didn't happen to the end of the script. Mm-hmm. So what was this main character's want? What was the external want that expressed that internal need, right? What could I show? I can't show she wants to be held by her mother. That's what she's hiding. That's all underneath the surface. So what can I show? Well, she's down on her luck. And so what the story is about her finding a job, right? That's what her external want is. Her desire in the script is to get a job because she's broke and she's being evicted and she's got to, or she's been evicted and she's got to get rent, get money to pay for a new place, right? She's got to get a house. But what helped me, and it may help other writers, Sherman may not agree with this, but what it helped me to know was that it helped me to know her internal need. Because when I understood in different scenes, when I understood why she was working so hard and would take a shitty job and all these things, knowing that her mother was back in town. Again, I'm not going to go into the whole script, but it was important for me to know that deep down, this woman just wanted security. And that's what the holding of her mother was really about. The abandonment of her mother earlier in her life and wanting that hug from that mother really was a need for security. And her external want was to get a job, desperately get a job, and she would do anything to get a job. That's what the story was about. But that expressed that internal need for security.
Yeah.
And then once I knew the the depth of that internal need, then I could express that over and over in different ways that I think elevate the script as we go on.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that. I think that it's funny that you say she just wanted to be embraced by her mom, because I actually think there is a way to flip that as an external want. Like, I actually think that you could flip just getting back. I mean, this is not your story, but just getting back to my mom for a hug is actually something I think you could base a whole script on. But when you said that she just needed security, and it's a direct reaction to her abandonment issues, I assume that, you know, that's sort of the internal objective that is very, very hard to make real on the page and on the screen. And so attaching it to something like trying to get a job, trying to find stability in one's life by getting a job is actually really smart. And I can see how that works as a movie or a TV show. Was it a movie or a TV show?
It was a TV show.
I think what I would like to talk a little bit about, though, is since this is Don't Do That Shit, passive characters, talk a little bit about action, character action. Because it's one thing to state a character's objective and figure out whether it's internal or whether it's external, whether it's something that you can see on screen and really make happen, or whether it's something that's too discreet and emotional. But then what happens? Like, once you identify what the character wants and you are trying to make an active character, there's another step. You have to actually put the character into action. So, like, what is action? What is character action? It's what the character does to get what they want. It's that simple. Once you've identified what really the character is trying to do, and I mean what the character is trying to achieve and what they really want and what they're going to go for, you then have to lay out a series of steps that they take in order to get what they want. That's really what drives story. Yes. And that's really what separates an active character versus a passive character, right? Because you can have a passive character you've done all this work to figure out what they want. You've done all this work to figure out what they're going to go after. And then if they don't take action, it's meaningless. Like Shakri said, the character has to set out to get it, face obstacles, and then keep persevering to try to get it. It's really a laser focus that you're establishing for your character. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the difference between what I call action versus activity.
Oh, this is a good one.
Because activity, sometimes people think, well, my character is doing a lot. You know, my character is getting ready for work, and they're working on the big presentation, and they're dealing with family drama and so on and so forth. But if it's not attached to what the character is trying to accomplish overall in the piece, it doesn't matter. Frying an egg for breakfast is not action.
It's an activity.
It's an activity. It's something they're doing on screen, But if their goal is to, for example, break their cousin out of prison, what does frying an egg have to do with it? It doesn't move the story forward. Talking to getting a coffee from the coffee shop doesn't really move it forward. Dealing with their relationship with their spouse doesn't really move it forward. So you have to identify that want, that goal, that objective, and then you have to put the character into action. And here's the even trickier part, Shu. Once you put that character into action, that also is not enough. Because now the character has to shape the story. That action has to have cause and effect. The action that the character takes has to alter the course of the story. Whether they succeed in that action or whether they fail, it has to change the course of the story. And that's sort of the last step that you need in order to make the character drive the story. When you get a want, action, and then cause and effect, now you're cooking. Now you're telling me a story where your protagonist, who I really want to root for and I really want to go on this journey with, you're telling me a story where this protagonist is actually shaping and driving the story.
I agree. And I would just go back to, again, all of this is so basic and so simple, but it really is because it's just fundamental. It feels like we're repeating the same thing in some ways, but it's because, you know, there's a certain way to shoot a jump shot. There's a certain way to build a script, or to build a character-driven script, at least. But or at least to think about it. But yeah, I think that cause and effect has a lot to do with what a, you know, once a character's intention is established, mm-hmm. and once they're going down the road of actions to accomplish that intent, that intended thing, that intended want, and running into conflict or obstacle in getting that, that the effect of that obstacle, you know, is the next choice that that character has to make in response to that obstacle that they've run into. And that next thing, that next choice that they make as a result of that, is where you get, you know, you begin the process of cause and effect. And that is also the time in which, I mean, if you're really doing it well, I think, then what you're starting to do is, and again, I'm repeating myself, but what you're starting to do is, as the character is making more choices, you're revealing more and more character. When I say character, revealing more and more inner traits of that character. That's why I think it's important, and I'll be a little deep here, but that's why I do think it's important to understand what the inside of the orange is, what the sort of the internal want or internal need is, even if it's only going to be lightly expressed, for lack of a better term. But where you it helps to know what the layers are, because especially in television, as you start to unpeel that onion, as characters start to make more and more choices based on those obstacles and those twists and turns and those cause and effects, then if you're really doing it well, you're starting to reveal more and more character and starting to get closer and closer to that inner need and starting to express that more and more and more. Then I think you end up with a really layered script where by the end, this thing that you thought was about John going to, you know, get a hot rod car so he could race in a race is really about, or John going to stop the asteroid that was coming to Earth is really about the fact that John never saw his father say he was proud of him or something like that. Then those things can collide because you reveal more and more character as you go along as a result of those choices.
100% agree. And I think that facing obstacles and conflict is really, to your point, just drilling down, is really the best way to reveal character and really the best way to reveal the inner workings of a character, right? If you have a character who wants to get out of a room, right? They're in a room, they want to get out, and there's no conflict. There's nobody stopping them from getting out. The door isn't locked. Everybody deals with that situation the exact same way, right? Which is, you get up out of your seat, you walk to the door, you open it, and you walk out. No conflict. Every single person, old, young, Republican, Democrat, black, white, everybody deals with getting out of the room the same way when there's no conflict. Just like everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time, same thing. No conflict. It doesn't reveal anything. But if there's somebody trying to stop them, well, now, and they want to get out of the room, now you're telling me something about how they work. Are they the kind of character that goes up and just immediately gets violent and tries to physically struggle their way out of the room? That's like an action protagonist, right? That's interesting. Are they somebody who is more cunning? Do they try to talk their way out of the room? That's interesting. Are they somebody who tries to create some kind of distraction to distract the person from that's trying to stop them from getting out of the room?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's right. Are they somebody who tries to discreetly dig a hole out, you know, so on and so forth. Now you're telling me about what kind of person this is. And if you're doing it right and you're layering these things scene after scene, sequence after sequence in your script, by the time we get to the end, to your point, Shu, we've learned a lot about this character and we're starting to build a real idea of who this character is. So it's important. It's why passive characters don't work. It's why I don't care about them, because I'm not learning anything about them. I'm not seeing them actually strive for anything. I'm not seeing them figure their way out of tight situations through muscle or brain or strategy. I'm just watching things happen to them. And to bring it full circle, that's the icing. That's the decoration. You know, that's the stuff that happens. Okay, yeah, it can be, you know, spectacle, and it can be shocking and cool on screen, but it doesn't get to the sort of foundational thing that we want out of a story, which is to learn about humanity. And we do that by connecting to characters and seeing what they go through, and then we can start to evoke emotion, and we can start to draw out themes, and we can start to do all of the sophisticated stuff that we want from a really, really full piece of work.
I think that's such a great point, that the fundamental building blocks, when placed properly, allow you to get to the deeper emotional stuff. That's why it's so important. I think that's such a great point. It's not just because this is how to build a screenplay and this is what Sherman and Shukri think. No. It's because to get to the deeper elements, this is the pathway, you know, is to build the blocks right. Then you can get to the deeper elements. I'll just go a step deeper and maybe even weirder is that, you know, I really believe that, you know, as they say, you take a journey of 1,000 miles just to find a mirror. And I really believe that a lot of the character journeys and scripts are in series really are about that character, that main character, going on a journey to find oneself, to find themselves. And so what, if you look at it, what really happens, I think, this is me, just me, my opinion, and the way I like to arrange and develop screenplays and characters, is that those intrinsic wants or needs, right, those internal needs that we talked about, and that external want, they work together. And what happens over the course of a story is that external want, that thing that I'm doing that's on the outside, I'm just trying to get out of the room, or I'm just trying to get a job, or I'm just trying to stop the asteroid. Over time, as that story develops, what it leads to is to that character finding their internal need, getting that internal need satisfied. So they go on that journey of 1,000 miles to find a mirror. And oftentimes that's what's happening. That's why I really think it's important, again, to reiterate, to understand as a writer what that character's internal need is, even if it's not going to be outwardly expressed, because you do need an external expressive way to, an external want that you can express. But I really think that the riddle of character journeys is that want gets going after that want and meeting the obstacles in that want and making choices as a result of that obstacle gets that character ultimately face to face with their need. And hopefully, if you choose to, gets their need met.
100% agree. Because you know what, Shu? People are really inarticulate, and people don't truly understand why they do the things they do. If they could at the beginning of the movie or the TV show express what their issue was, then we wouldn't have anything to watch. They would just like fix it. if they could summarize it in a sentence, then they would also be able to fix it. And so what happens is we think we're going after one thing for one reason, only throughout the course of the journey to discover that there was actually something deeper at play. Michael Corleone, right? Michael Corleone didn't know at the beginning of Godfather that he wanted power and that he was ruthless and that he wanted to take his family and settle all scores in a very bloody and violent montage. He didn't know that at the beginning of the movie. He found that out through the course of the movie.
You know, Walter White, same thing.
Same thing, didn't man. He wanted
power over that cancer. He didn't realize that. He just thought he wanted enough money to put away so his kid would be taken care of and his family would be taken care of after he died. But ultimately, he discovers what he ultimately wanted, what that internal need was power.
Yes.
And power over those things.
And to drill that point home, we can only understand that as he seeks something out, as he identifies an objective for himself, goes after it through all the trials and tribulations, all the obstacles and hurdles, and then tries to accomplish it. That's the only way we can learn that about these characters. I want to wrap up with one more thing, Shu, which is I want to talk about the fact that, to me, this stuff, this is story. What we're talking about here is story. A character who wants something and has a hard time getting it, that's story. That's it. Yeah. That's what it is at its most essential elements. There isn't really much that comes on top of it. All the cool twists and turns, all the cool set pieces and spectacle and all the great things that we love and surprises and things that happen in cinema and television that we talk about after we watch something. To me, that all comes from what we've just been discussing. Mm-hmm. A character who has an objective and has a hard time getting it. So a little anecdote, and I think it goes back to why TV sucks. My first ever TV meeting was for a network TV show. And I went to the general meeting to meet with the executives. And one of the first questions they asked me, I'm a new writer, man. I haven't had a TV job yet. One of the first questions they asked me is, are you more of a character writer or a plot writer? And I was so confused. I must have sat there in silence for 20 seconds.
Was this a showrunner or an executive?
It was an executive at the network. And because to me, there is no difference between those two things. Plot comes from character. The character is the foundational thing that gets us to plot. So the idea that there are people in this industry who think that those two things are separate and that they exist as separate entities that you can be good at one and not good at the other is like the most crazy thing I ever heard. And at the time, as a new writer, I was like, is there something I don't understand? Am I missing something? Is there some secret sauce that's going out in this industry that I don't get? The answer is no. I was right all along. I was right all along that those two things are the same thing. And they influence each other so much that they're like, they have like a symbiotic relationship. They can't live without each other. But at the time, I was really baffled by it.
You don't think that that's the prevailing wisdom out there?
Yes, unfortunately. And it goes to your point.
Professional experience?
Yes, it goes to your point. And this is why this is an important episode. And it goes to your point about most TV being whack. And actually most movies being whack when it comes down to it. And most storytelling, visual media, moving images being whack. Because people think that those two things are separate. Shu, have you ever been in a room, a TV writing room, where people are just like, regardless of character and the characters you've established and what's going on, they're just like throwing random plot stuff at the wall?
Yes.
I've been in that situation. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I can expand, but you go ahead.
Well, I don't have much to say. It's like I've been in that situation and I've walked out of that room going, I literally don't understand what's happening. And I'm a pretty smart guy, and I think I understand how stories work, and I have no idea why things are happening, why any of these ideas are considered good or bad, because they're not tethered to what I think is the most important thing, which is character. Please expand.
I'm just agreeing. I mean, I feel often the same way. It's incredibly frustrating because it's like sort of, and I think for, maybe it's for us in particular, but probably other people who learned in the way that we did, that it's like somebody speaking another language. I don't know. I agree with you. Like, I don't know how to think of stories or story elements in terms of like shit that just happens.
Cannot do it.
I don't even know where to begin. I mean, anything could happen. Sure, a thunderstorm, an earthquake, a fucking, somebody takes a shit in a box. I don't know. I mean, anything. I don't know how to think that way. I know how to think of like what we've been saying. I know how to think of characters who yes. have intentions, who meet obstacles,
yes.
and then make choices as a result. No. We're starting any other place. I have no fucking idea what we're talking about.
Sure, I can't even.
But other people seem to know. So maybe
no, they
we're
don't.
In the
though.
Fucking,
that, no, they don't. No, sure. They don't know. They think they know, but they don't know, and that's why their shit's whack. And that's why you get. That's why you get. You know, 110 pages of fucking bullshit that makes no sense. That's all over the place, and you turn to the. It says fade to black at the end, and you close the last page. And you're just like, what did I read? This is hollow and empty. Nothing. It's none of it's important. A lot of stuff, quote unquote, happened, but none of it's important. I can't even think of a project. I can't even sit down to outline a script or brainstorm a script until I say to myself, self, who is the main character?
Yeah, who is this about?
What do they want? And why is it hard for them to get it? If I can't answer those questions, then we can't even talk. There's not even anything for me to say. There's not even anything for me to brainstorm about. We can't, we can't bounce ideas off each other. I can't give you a pitch. Nothing. I can't even talk about the story until I identify those things.
Unfortunately, I think we're in the minority, man. Because and we've been in good rooms. I don't want to. Anybody
oh, we've been in great rooms. Yeah, of course.
I think we're in the minority because I really believe, like, for better or worse, that this is an industry that runs off of, again, especially television, but that runs off of, like, what would be cool. That's all a lot of executives seem to care about. That's all in some cases, networks or showrunners, like, what would be cool? Let's see the cool thing. I don't know. I mean, what?
Who cares? Who cares? Exactly. Because here's the thing.
The public cares? Maybe the public just wants to see cool what? Shit. I don't know. I don't even.
I can't tell you how many times. I'm not a huge action. You know, superhero sci-fi. I like certain pieces within those genres, but that's not my sweet spot. I can't tell you how many times I've been sort of forced to watch a big, huge tentpole movie. And we get to the third act and all the cool stuff is happening and it's big and there's explosions and there's chaos and there's action. And I go, I don't care. I have no idea what's going on. I don't care. This is not tethered to any human emotion that I care about. And so, yes, there are explosions and there's CGI and there's spectacle. And I go, I don't really care. Sorry. It would have been better if it was smaller and connected to something I actually care about. So I'm in total agreement with that.
Yeah. I wish there was a remedy, but I don't think there is.
The remedy is study this stuff. Think about this stuff. Learn it inside and out. Learn all the different applications of how to write active characters and avoid passive characters. That's the remedy. And I'll tell you,
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm being negative, but yes, that's true. And I hope, you know, listeners that are interested, the nerds that are still listening at this point in the episode, that's true. But I also believe that, like, this industry doesn't happen to reward that kind of thinking very much. It rewards just give me something cool.
I see.
Give
I
me actually, something that blows up.
I disagree
now,
with you.
I
disagree with you because I'll tell you that this, to me, this is the secret weapon. This is the secret seasoning that you keep in your bag. And then you put it on something and everybody goes, oh, my God, how'd you do what? Oh, my God, this tastes delicious. Where did that come from?
It's called salt and pepper, you fuck. That's what you want to say.
But
it's
called
a basic season. You had a bland ass. You just made me throw some meat on a grill
and thought
was going to taste good. I threw some salt and pepper on it. That's all. It's just salt and pepper.
Exactly. But to a whole industry that does not recognize seasoning at all. When you come with that seasoning, you look like the master chef, bro. Yes, this is simple. This is foundational. We have built our whole understanding of story on this stuff. But because a lot of people haven't, when you come in with a note, when you come in with an idea that's based in this type of storytelling, in this level of detail, and this level of commitment to active characters as opposed to passive characters, you can blow people's minds. You can really, really in a room where people are just talking about random cool shit happening and you drop these sort of gems on them, they go, oh my God, Shaqiri is the greatest storyteller of all time. We have to give him his respect. He's no longer Rodney Dangerfield. He understands something we don't. He's the man. Hire him. $2 million for the script. Okay. No? Disagree?
I'm skeptical. Look, I was in a writer who I won't name, who is very well respected, who I respect very, very, very much, was, you know, in a position of, you know, doing some light mentoring earlier in my career. And he was very, very good. He's very well known, so I'm not going to say who it is. But he has a saying where he says that people watch television because they want to see cool people doing cool shit. And yeah. I think that is the prevailing, now he's an older guy, but I think that is the prevailing, and he's a good writer. I think that is the prevailing wisdom in this industry, that you just want to deliver cool people doing cool shit.
I don't disagree with that. I just think it needs to be based in the context of a character who's really trying to accomplish something and has a hard time getting it. I mean, cool people doing cool shit, totally out of context, is not what people want. People want cool people doing cool shit in the context of great character-driven storytelling. 100%.
Okay.
Because if you look at, I think the biggest spectacle appointment television in our recent memory is Game of Thrones. And if you look at Game of Thrones.
And This Is Us. Thank you.
Okay. But I said spectacle. This Is Us is not spectacle. This Is Us is people crying in living
rooms. It's a certain kind of spectacle. That's a certain kind of spectacle.
Sure, stop trying to big yourself up. Okay, I know everybody knows you wrote for This Is Us. You're getting your props.
I worked on the Emmy winning seasons.
Just to be clear.
The Emmy nominated seasons. Just to be clear.
Can I please make my point about Game of Thrones now?
Yes.
My point is, the early seasons of Game of Thrones were so entrenched in character objectives. You know, and I mean, I know people have different opinions about how it worked later on. But if you watch first few seasons, yes, there was magic. Yes, there was huge battles. Yes, there was CGI and fantasy and all that stuff. But I think why it really resonated with people is because we knew what these characters wanted. And we learned through conflict how they were going to accomplish it. And I think that is what makes that show special. So, yes, it's cool people doing cool shit. But it's also the context of real character objective.
I agree. But I know of a show that is on right now that is very popular, very, very popular amongst a lot of people, will probably come back. There is not a character that wants... I couldn't tell you what in the hell the main character wants or
say
needs.
The title of the show.
I'm not going to
say the title of the show, you coward.
There are a lot of different wants. There's a lot of, but my point is, there's a lot of cool shit happening, and it's genuinely cool. There's a lot of cool people who are dressed really cool and interesting, and there's a lot of stuff. It looks really like fantastic. It looks great. All these things around the things that we're talking about, all those elements are fantastic. But I couldn't tell you like what the like the external one of the game. It seems to change every episode. I couldn't tell you what it is. I couldn't tell you what they like in what their internal need actually was. I have no fucking idea. I don't know what I was watching.
I have no idea.
But it's popular.
Listen, to listeners who made it this far, put in the comments what you think Shu is talking about. And then he'll send you like a little wink emoji when you get it right or something.
Because
I don't know what show you're talking about.
Yes, you do. But my point is that show is well received. And I'm not knocking that show. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking it. I'm giving it props. I'm just saying that I don't think it's necessarily true that the stuff that we're talking about, although I value it and you value it, I don't think that it's necessarily true that the rest of the viewing public or the rest of the writing world values those things.
Fair enough. So, Shakri, this has been what I hope is an illuminating conversation. I had a lot of fun talking to you about all this nerd stuff, but now it is time to end the episode as we always do with our evergreen segment. Don't do that shit. A little time where we tell you what not to do. Now, you have just listened to an entire episode, don't do that shit, passive characters. But you know what? We're going to add a little bit more. We're just going to sprinkle a little more don't do that shit on the top of this beautiful episode. So, Shu, would you like to start today? Would you like me to start? It could go either way.
I'll start. Mine is very simple today. My don't do that shit is don't travel for Thanksgiving. I know this is airing the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, so Thanksgiving is tomorrow. And unless you are traveling with your own people in your own household and you're going to another place where you're going to be inside your own people with your own house or with the bubble of your own people inside one household, fine. But unless you're doing that, unless you must, please, please, please. 250,000 people have died. It disproportionately affects Black and Latino families. Please do not travel for Thanksgiving or Christmas. Stay inside your household. Have a little one-on-one thing. If you're alone, you know, I understand you might want to go get with somebody. You know, I understand that. If you got to do it safe. But please, for the vast majority of people, please do not travel for Thanksgiving.
I love that. Thank you for that message. It's not screenwriting related, but very important. My don't do that shit is screenwriting related. It's very quick. I feel like it's complimentary to what this whole episode has been. Don't do this shit. Don't think that you are rewriting the rules when you're really just ignoring the basics. Don't think that you're subverting something, like you're some genius writer who's going to change the whole world, and you're really just ignoring the basics. If somebody comes to you and tells you you have a fundamental basic problem with your script, the answer can never be, I was trying not to do that fundamental thing. You know, listen, you need to have an active character. Well, I was trying not to write an active character. I'm subverting active. Come on, man. Pay a little bit of homage to the basics. Don't think that you're going to rewrite the rules with your script. You're not. You know what I mean? There are different ways to subvert things. It really takes being a master of the basics in order to properly subvert things. It takes a master to build the whole house of cards built on fundamentals and then remove one or two cards very specifically to change the way it works. So just respect the basics. Don't think you're going to change shit. Listen to the fundamentals. If somebody gives you a note based on the very foundational things that make story work, take the note. Try your hardest. That's it.
It's good.
You have been listening to The Diversity Hires. You can find us anywhere across all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We are at Div Hires Pod. I'm your host, Sherman Payne.
And I'm Shukri Tillman. This show is produced by the wonderful August K. Burton, a.k.a. AKB.
AKB.
AKB. Thanks for listening this week. Go to thediversityhires.com find us. You can write us there if you want us to talk about any particular issue. If you got any feedback, we'd love to hear it. You can find us, as Sherman mentioned, anywhere on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at DivHiresPod is our handle. And we want you to subscribe. And the big part is share. We only have like 36 listeners. Not really. We got a few hundred, but we want more. So please share. Tell your friends. Share in your groups. Share the podcast. Anywhere you find podcasts. All right. We will see you next week on The Diversity Hires.
Peace.